We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 378. We are brought to you today by Harry's. Go to harrys.com/bluewire. And you can check them out there. So, ALCS Game 2, Yankees drop. An absolute gut-wrenching loss. I was trying to think of a word to describe it, Scott. And organ grinding is the way I think I can describe that game.
Organ grinding? That's what you got? It was one of those games when you're seeing... You see opportunities, and then there's a lot of missed opportunities at the end of the game. And towards the end, I mean, honestly, for me, I'm watching the end of this game. I'm like, well, it's going to happen.
Just only a matter of time.
It's a matter of time with the guys that were rolling out at this point. I mean, Houston left so many guys on base too. The Yankees were getting out of a lot of jams, and
I thought they were going to really. The Astros are really going to regret not getting runs in the 10th when Loaisiga couldn't find the strike zone.
Yeah.
And they brought in Happ, and you thought, okay, maybe this is like breathes new life into the Yankees. The Astros backs against the wall where they have runners on base, and two of just the most inept umpiring calls back to back. That
the Gary Sanchez at bat, yeah. You mean?
Yeah, like he misses the ball by 2 feet and the guy calls it a foul tip.
Yeah.
So that's why I wasn't even mad at the makeup call, but it was 1,000% a makeup call right after that. But it's just inept umpiring, just like condensed into a 20-second window. It's like, yeah, here's the poster board for inept umpiring in 2019.
And then Gary Sanchez bouncing up and down like a small infant about the third strike call. Bro, you just missed the ball by 2 feet. You know what I mean? Like, you're lucky you're there. And, oh, by the way, there was another ball that hit the rafters and, like, all these things that
did
are
you
happening.
Know that could happen in Houston? I didn't know that could happen.
Happened twice tonight.
No, I know. I'd never seen that before, though. And that's a Tampa Bay Tropicana move.
Yeah, it's definitely – apparently it's a dome thing. And these domes are susceptible. I mean, it helped us out a little bit, or could have helped us out. Didn't, but – gave the at-bat new life. But yeah, you know, the thing is when you're looking at how many guys the Astros also had on base, you know, they missed a lot of opportunities.
Yeah.
They missed a lot of opportunities. I'm looking up the runners on. But
well, at one point, the Yankees were 1-for-2 with runners in scoring position, and the Astros were 1-for-8.
Yeah, yeah. I think the last time I heard they had left 10 guys on. I swear I'd heard that.
After the sixth inning, the Yankees did absolutely nothing. They didn't really have anyone on base. They had no hits until Gardner's two-out single when they mounted a little bit of a rally there. I mean, it's exactly how you draw up a game against – it's exactly how you draw up a game against Verlander, though. You don't expect to crush Verlander. Like, no one's mad that you didn't crush Verlander, but you made him work. You got him out. He didn't complete seven innings. So that's the blueprint for facing Verlander. And Boone made the right call, I think, by bringing in Chad Green in the third inning, because Paxton clearly was not on his game, and it was gonna get bad. It was one run. It was gonna get worse.
It was almost it very well could have gotten bad before that. Paxton was not around the zone. He was behind
every hitter,
practically every hitter. And yeah, when we know this was one of the big keys that we talked about before this series. If Paxton's gonna go up there and not throw strikes early, this Houston Astros team is going to take the pitches, and then they're going to sit in zones and wait for him to come into the strike zone, and they're going to mash. And he was falling behind too many guys. He's lucky that ball from Bregman didn't leave the yard because it was smoked.
Bregman thought it was gone.
It should have been gone. And every other ballpark, it's gone, except for maybe Fenway because it's a high wall. But it was a line drive that goes out of most ballparks. And He got lucky in some circumstances. There's no doubt about it. Like, you know, he got that in the first inning, even got a double play to get out of it. That was good. Like, you're looking at what happened there, and you're like, okay, you can kind of get out of this. But you know, it was clear that they were making him throw strikes. Right? They were waiting for Paxton to come in, and unless the only way that Paxton could have combated that strategy is by peppering the zone. You pepper the strike zone, and these guys are taking. On that first time around, then you have the opportunity on the second time around to expand the strike zone a little bit more. and he fell right into their lap and just continued to throw balls and played into their game plan. And they just couldn't execute when with runners on.
The frustrating thing about Paxton is his stuff can play in the strike zone. He can get guys out with his stuff in the strike zone. So there was a lot of paranoia about tip pitching. Because I don't know if you've noticed this, but every time Bregman reaches first base, he yells something into the dugout. And people are like, oh, Bregman knows something. He's giving away Paxton's tell. And it's like, no, not every time he yells into the dugout, he's screaming about some tipping. I think it could be posturing where he knows it's a thing. It's a storyline because Paxton had a tip pitching issue earlier in this year in Houston. So if they can play mind games,
yeah,
that's if you can play mind games with the other pitcher, even if you think if you make him think you think
I'm gonna make you, you think that we coming, think that we know yeah. what's coming because you don't you're
that's almost as bad as actually know what's it. Coming because then you're not thinking about executing pitches, you're thinking about not tipping pitches. So yeah, it was 100% the right call to pull Paxton in the third inning. And Chad Green looked maybe the best I've ever seen Chad Green look. He was on fire. And I know you were screaming about pulling him for Ottavino. And
I didn't care who you brought in. I didn't want anybody
so was
to come
your
in.
Problem with Ottavino coming in or no. was it pulling Chad Green?
It was pulling Chad Green. Like, okay. Yes, Ottavino would not have been the first guy I go to because I just think he's been flat out bad lately.
Highly
I mean,
questionable.
In the playoffs, he's been bad. He's not been able to throw strikes. And that's a problem when you're playing the Houston Astros.
And the one strike he threw on the first pitch was a friggin' meatball spinning slider.
Right. But that's the thing. The adverse effect to not throwing strikes is you can sit first pitch strike like fastball. And if you get something where you want it, you can do damage to it. Like you can
kind of
look
foreshadowed
for to try to get him to try to get ahead.
We foreshadowed that Ottavino matchup. Like, this is not good news.
No. When you have Chad Green coming in, and did he get one or two outs when he came in for
He pitched two total innings. So he got two outs after Paxton, then he pitched a full inning, and then he got one out in the fifth inning. So here's the thing, though. It was two innings, but it was also two inning breaks.
I don't care about that. He came out after that last inning break, though. He was out there throwing the ball and looked unbelievable.
Right, so once he's already out there again,
yeah, that makes nothing. Yeah, exactly.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just trying to.
You just
think what Boone's
this
thinking
is,
and what their analytics are thinking, because you know there's data behind all
well,
this.
God,
like,
yeah,
we argued back and forth last night about this, but the fact of the matter is, they take all the information at hand to make their best educated decision, and it didn't work out.
This is exactly the argument I was talking about with the starting pitchers. It's the same situation. It's the guy going well, and you're trying to go against the whatever the numbers say, even though Ottavino and Springer, there were four at-bats. Three of them were strikeouts, I think they said, right? But four at-bats is not enough to make a distinctive decision.
Four at-bats is
not
a
sample. Nothing. And so when you have a guy like Green who is absolutely I mean, every single person who was watching that game could tell that Chad Green was on fire, was unhittable at that point. And yeah. when you see these guys who struggle, some of them against the high velocity, the way that he was throwing, he's got movement. When he's on, he's got one of the best fastballs in baseball, and he was on. And at that point, you got to stay with him. You have to stay with him.
Finish the fifth inning.
You finish the inning, yes. Or at least get him to a point where he's not, you know, if you see a chink in the armor or a weakness or of some sort, some kind of a thing that says he's not, executing like he had been in the last inning in two thirds, then okay, have someone ready. But you can't pull him after a dominant strikeout to bring in a guy that has been struggling to throw strikes. It was reckless. It was bad.
By going to your bullpen in the third inning, you're putting all your chips in the middle of the table because you're going for broke there. You're bringing in your high leverage guys in the third inning.
That's why you have to extend Green a little bit further. That's why
you
got to have Green
do it. Yeah, maybe a
little
bit further. Yeah, I mean, he did pitch two innings, and then Canley ended up pitching two and a third or two and two-thirds, two and two-thirds innings.
Canley was great. Yep.
The one scary moment with Canley was the deep fly ball by Correa. Other than that, he was great. Green was great. Ottavino wasn't necessarily that bad. He gave up the home run, which was bad. It was a bad pitch. But then he struck out Who did he strike out? Who then reached?
But here's the thing. I don't care
because
about that.
Because on the pass ball.
It already happened.
No, I know.
The damage had happened to him. The job was already failed when he walked in and threw a meatball over the center of the plate for George Springer to
center,
smack.
Center dick right there. I mean, 87 mile an hour spinner.
It's a terrible... When that thing is leaking over the plate and stays on the plate, it's a bad pitch. And it doesn't really...
Didn't Springer hit it a million feet?
A million feet. And so I don't really care what he did after that, because at that point, it was already... He failed his job.
He's way down the trust tree right now.
But is he? Because he should have been already.
This should be the final nail in the coffin. Like, he is firmly below Canely, obviously Green, Britton, Chapman. He's above like Loaisiga and Sessa and Sabathia. But other than that, I'm not bringing him in high leverage situations where you got to make a pitch and you can't walk a guy, or you're facing someone like Springer, who is a home run hitter. And I mean, how many freaking times has the broadcast said, as Springer goes, the Astros go? It's like, I feel like they say that every time he walks into the batter's box.
I mean, they say a lot of stupid shit. I don't know what they say half the time, but.
I got to shout out. So Andrea.
Yeah.
Our friend Andrea, she has a perfect nickname for Ottavino. She calls him Ajitavino.
Yeah, it's true. It's true, because the ball, I mean, you know, when he's on and that frisbee thing is going across the plate, across the body of the right-handed hitter, it looks crazy. He's got some stupid movement, but lately he just hasn't been able to control it very well.
It's been a regression pretty much for him the last month and a half of the season.
It has. And specifically in the playoffs, when we're looking at two at bats, two walks, two jobs that you did not complete, and you know, more guys coming out of the pen walking dudes. You know, CC comes out being the lefty specialist, throws three straight balls. Honestly, the fourth one was a ball. It should have been ball four. He called it a strike. Got out of it, so good for him. And then you know, Loaisiga coming in, it was another
six,
one of those like
six straight balls.
What are we doing? Like that's the entire reason
it's a
why
helpless feeling.
I didn't even want him on the roster. He's a guy that has been struggling throwing strikes.
Why not Sessa there?
Yes, I agree. Why not Sessa there? Why not Heller in his freaking spot, first of all? But why?
Well, yeah. I mean, Heller didn't really get many innings under his belt, but he's a more, I think we talked about this when we were talking.
He's a more one inning guy.
He's got better. I don't know. He just seems like Loaisiga is kind of in that middle where it's like you don't quite know how to use him.
Loaisiga was used pitcher. Well yesterday.
in a blowout win?
Yeah. Loaisiga okay. was used very well on Saturday
innings.
Night.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he used back-to-back nights. I believe Buck on the broadcast said first time all year he was used back-to-back games. That makes sense. He's not a short inning reliever,
so why not a guy like Sessa in that?
Well, they backed themselves into a corner where they're throwing darts at a wall by that point, hoping something sticks.
But this is exactly what happened against the Minnesota Twins, but didn't backfire or didn't burn us when.
Well, it's because it's the Minnesota Twins.
I understand that, but it's a dangerous strategy when you start going in there and you use three relievers, three of your high power relief guys in one inning, and it's the fifth inning.
I think they were planning on using Ottavino for more, but they just couldn't because
he was bad again. Because the same thing happened last time, right? So how about we learn from our mistakes?
I think
then.
Hopefully they finally learn their lesson.
But that's the thing: stay with the guy who's hot. Stay with the guy who's hot. Stay with him. Guess what? Houston did. They stayed with their guys. Freaking what's his face? Submarine boy who's been in the league for 97 years. Pitched two innings,
inning and two thirds. Yeah. Well, they extended Canely to two and two thirds.
He's done
innings.
That.
That's longer than he's used to.
Right, he's gone.
That's
two
a long
innings.
Outing for Canely.
It is, and
I thought maybe they would have extended Britton.
But honestly,
Britton had an easy inning in the eighth. Why not extend Britton for the ninth, and then you get Chapman for the tenth?
Well, I thought they were going to do that originally, and when Britton went into the dugout, it didn't look like he was finished. He was kind of walking around like.
Why'd
they
bring him out? I want to know like what happened there with Britton, because he looked great.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that they were talking about Chapman for two innings, that he's been, he's ready to go, but he labored.
25 pitches, yeah, it was a lot of long at-bats.
But Canely was used for that long, almost out of necessity, I think, at that point. You know, I think that I don't think Boone, like for instance, if Canely had come in on that, in that spot where Green did, I think he would have done the same thing because the freaking numbers tell you, like you at a certain point, you got to take him out, but he was forced to keep him in that spot because he really had nobody else to go to because he wanted to use Britton for the eighth.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the extra innings and what happened there. First, I want to tell you guys about Harry's Razors. Humans have been shaving for thousands of years. Let me educate you a little bit, Scott, on a history lesson. You know what? The secret to a great shave has not changed much. The ancient Greeks did not need flex balls or heated handles, and neither do you. That's why Harry's doesn't overcharge you to add gimmicky features to their razors. They focus on delivering what actually matters, sharp, durable blades at a fair price. I love Harry's. You love Harry's, Scott, because it gives us a close shave, even though, you know, we got beards going on, but you still got to get that neckline lined up.
Yeah, clean it up.
If your beard stretches up to your cheeks, like you're getting up there in age, like who knows where hair is growing out of at this point.
Yo, whoa. My hair's not going up to my cheeks, man.
Do us a favor. Go check out Harry's at harrys.com/bluewire for your free trial today. Harry's is a return to the essential quality, durable blades at a fair price, just $2 per blade.
Listeners of the Bronx Pinstripe Show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/bluewire. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle with a firm grip, 5-blade razor with lubricating strip and trimmer blade. You'll get a rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade to cover your razor and keep it dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to start shaving better today.
So what's the feeling coming out of, like, what is the vibe on the flight home to New York tonight? Because they did what they had to do, get a game in Houston, right?
Yes, so they did. At the end of the day, when you're looking back, they flipped home field.
That was
what was important. That was one of the big storylines going into this game, health or home field. Well, they flipped it.
Are you a proponent of, do you believe that even though, like, certain losses can be worse than other losses?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think they can be. I think tonight.
So is this a loss that's bad? Like, if you went out there and got Verlandered, like we heard that term thrown around last week, when, like, you get Verlandered some nights and he shoves for 8 innings and, like, what are you gonna do? You move on. Like, you can swallow that loss and just go to the next day. But when you had them on the brink, you had them where your shoe was on their throat and you were ready to stomp. And you just couldn't go down the final inch. Does that hurt more?
Because I don't even think it was that. I mean, the game was tied for the majority of the second half of that game. So
no, I know. Yeah, they had the lead after the Judge homer, but that was in the fifth inning.
Yeah, but so they didn't really have a stranglehold on that game at any point. There was no, like,
no. But what I'm saying is, it's like they were going either way.
Yeah, they were in the opportunity. They did exactly what they needed to do against Verlander. They got him into a situation where the pitch count was up. The one situation that we definitely need to talk about was the inning when we had first and second, and Verlander was definitely laboring. I think he was up near 80, 90 pitches at that point when Phil Nevin sent LeMahieu.
Oh, sixth inning, yeah.
On the sixth inning, on the ground ball to...
Was that a mistake to send him?
To Altuve. And the ball. So when I'm watching this live and I'm seeing what happened, I'm like, you can't see the runner, first of all, from the broadcast. From the live broadcast, you couldn't see LeMahieu. You see what's in front of you. You see the play. And then all of a sudden, there's a play at home and he's out by a mile. So I'm looking at that. And in my head, I'm thinking ball was to second base. LeMahieu was on second. There were two outs. So he got a good jump, but he's still running. Like, I'm not sending him there. You have a guy that Verlander who was laboring in that inning. He was definitely gassed in that inning. There was a point there where I thought that there was an opportunity to take advantage of him. They were hitting the ball hard. They were squaring him up, long at bats. He wasn't fooling anybody in that inning anymore. He was definitely laboring. And
Sanchez was coming
up. And Gary Sanchez was up. And although Gary, like, hindsight, you're looking at his at bat in the seventh inning and it was god awful against Verlander. The first at-bat he had against Verlander was actually not bad. He took some really good swings, just missed a few fastballs that went straight back to the fence. And
his last at-bat of the night, despite how it ended, was actually a good at-bat.
Right. There were a few really good cuts. I mean, he's just missing those balls, but
that's,
he's missing
that's
a lot
one
of fast
those
balls.
Plays you take a chance when you know runs are hard to come by, and you just make the guy make a good throw. They made Correa make a perfect throw.
So in that situation, when I'm watching it and I'm seeing the way Verlander is in a current situation, like I want the bases loaded. I want Gary Sanchez up after taking some decent swings the first time, and I want to put that pressure on Verlander and make him throw something and get him out. When I saw the replay after that, after I saw the replay from the angle of kind of where Phil Nevin was, because he was like three quarters of the way down the line, it was definitely not as bad as I thought it was. You know, when I saw the live play, it looked the ball bounced directly to Correa. He made a great play off balance and threw a strike home, and that was the reason why LeMahieu looked so far out. It was because it was a terrific play, and the ball, it was a very fortunate bounce right to him. So that's not something he was already being sent when the ball was almost in the air, you know, off of Altuve's chest. So I don't really. I still don't think it was probably the right call, but I don't think it was as egregious as it looked live.
Yeah, it's a chance that I'm okay taking. There was a few different weird plays where, and I don't know if it was the broadcast angles or what it was, but didn't you think, or there were a couple instances where the ball was going in the gap and the Yankees just, like, Maben seemed like he was playing in left center field. Like, he was not playing left field. He was playing left center field tonight.
Yeah, and what are you saying about it? You're saying that the alignment?
No, I mean, it's just like, I kind of got fooled by I didn't know if it was the broadcast angle, the way they showed it, or if it was just like the positioning of Maben, because that Brantley one,
the line drive,
the Bregman line drive off Chad Green.
Yeah, there were two of them. Yeah,
that I was like, oh, that's a gapper, and it's just like, no, Maben's didn't even have to like run for it; he was just there.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think he was. They were definitely playing them a little bit further over towards center field.
I mean, props to the positioning.
They were playing them right.
Yeah,
yeah. They played them correctly. They, you know, that wasn't really much of an issue. And then we're looking at a couple situations late in the game too, right? Aaron Hicks all of a sudden shows his face. He goes in and pinch hits for Maben.
Got his feet wet.
Get your feet wet now. Like, okay.
Didn't want to start him against Verlander. We didn't mention that Stanton didn't play because of a quadriceps pull.
And this is a problem because now you have a guy that's limited to play. And if you take him off of this roster, he can't play in the World Series if they were to advance. So they're in a predicament now where they're basically playing down a guy. That's what's happening because they have a guy who's injured,
and it's
maybe
not
he's
like
not
you
injured
can,
enough to take him off so that it's risking for the next series.
It's not even something where they're like, oh, let's just DH him because then you lose Edwin.
Mm-mm.
So,
which he has been pretty bad lately.
He's been bad, but
I still want him up every
still
time.
Still want him. You still want Edwin in the lineup.
Yeah, so, there was
so you're in a predicament where you're deciding if Stanton's. So it was weird comments because Boone's like, oh, we're just trying to get him an extra day. He's definitely able to pinch hit or emergency situations. And then there was a question asked to Boone. I have the quote in here. He was asked if it was absolutely necessary, would he play? And he said, oh, for sure.
But does that mean based on like if there were another injury and he had to play?
I guess that's what that means. Yeah.
So when you're looking at, I mean, they said that he did something to it early in the game yesterday.
First at
bat
Saturday night, running to first base.
All right, he hit a home run after that. So there were positive results from after he did, and he actually played a relatively decent left field last night, I thought. So, I mean, I don't know what ill effects were. The next day, you could probably feel it more. Maybe he was tight. Who knows? But Encarnacion had, a good at-bat at the end of the game. Got Gardner up. Encarnacion standing on first. What am I doing? I'm looking around for Tyler freaking Wade because this is exactly the situation you needed him in. And
Tyler
what would have
Wade
happened?
Or...
They would have taken the lead because Gardner goes out there and smacks a base hit. Tyler Wade scoring on that play. Steal a bag.
Oh,
boom.
Well, you're assuming he stole the bag.
You're goddamn
too,
right he's stealing that bag.
So even if it wasn't Tyler Wade, though, if Stanton had started, then you could have pinch run Maben.
I don't think Maben's definitely not the base stealer or runner that Wade is. So
but he's
I don't
hell
think
of a lot faster than Edwin.
I mean, it's not even... You can't even. They're very different things. Like Edwin's just going station to station.
So yeah,
I don't even know
when
if they
you play
Edwin
with a
on
three
a,
man bench. When you play with a three man bench, you're hamstringing yourself.
No pun intended. But that is the thing. That's the thing.
Here's another thing, though.
When you're in these situations, you got to have those role players. That's the reason we're here.
But they add the extra pitchers so they can go to the bullpen in the third inning.
It's not the extra pitcher that's the problem, though, for that. It was the roster. Aaron Hicks is screwing shit up.
Well, I think Aaron Hicks gets a start on Tuesday.
I mean, he should at this point.
I'm surprised they didn't start him tonight.
Actually, go ahead. Yeah. Me too. Tonight was the night you started.
I mean, if you got an injury to Stanton, it's a clear path to start Aaron Hicks. Again, if he's on the roster and you're not willing to start him, then don't put him on the roster.
Yes, because then you can have a healthy guy who has a specific role and can help your team in a specific
And how much
situation.
Did you think that this in extra off. Innings there was going to be a ball to center field that he was going to have to throw home on, and it was going to, like, his elbow was going to fall off with the baseball and it was going to come tumbling into the infield?
Yeah, I don't know, man. That whole situation is strange, but yeah, when you don't have a guy that's one of the last men on the bench that's hanging out there waiting for that pinch run situation, exactly the way you had it. Edwin works a good at bat. That's what he does. He drives the count up, and he can get those walks, and now you get somebody to run for him, and you win the goddamn game.
So going home, 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Tuesday, Severino against Cole. You got to kind of take the same approach that you took to Verlander to Cole. Just work them, and hope to get into their bullpen.
You know, as much as I don't like Smoltz and his commentary and the things that he absolutely just hammers down your throat, he's not wrong about the bullpen. He's not. When you have this quick hook, and this is really worrying me about Boone.
Catch up.
It's going to catch you in the ass at some point. It's absolutely going to do it when you have a seven-game series.
You go for broke in tonight's game. You got to win the game.
Right, but that's my point. He went for broke, but then he didn't. You extend Green in that inning, then you have more options later on. What he's doing is he's leaving this team with no options at the end of the game. You either going with Chapman for two innings, or you're rolling in CeCe and Lyons and Loaiza and whomever else.
What if?
And why the hell Sessa exceeded expectations this year, seemingly pitched much better than, why is he not coming in that game? I don't understand.
He's got to be ahead of the order on Loaiza.
I mean,
especially
after Loaiza already pitched yesterday and hasn't pitched in back-to-back games all year.
So
what are we doing?
They brought in Sabathia to get the one lefty out.
Fine.
Then there was a couple righties up, so they wanted to bring in a right-handed pitcher. And I'm sure there's some numbers that say that Loaiza's spin rate or something has better against those hitters than Sessa. But you're going to a couple righties, and then Hap is the guy who's going to be out there until the game ended,
right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So once Hap's in, no one else is coming in. But I was going to ask you, what if they pulled Chad Green because they, in the back of their mind, are saying, we need an opener for game four?
Again, he still threw two innings. So,
right, I mean, what if two innings was his max, though, is what I'm saying.
But why? Why is that his max?
I mean, this is the thing. I obviously
he's already
don't know
out
the
there.
Damn answer.
No, but my question is, it doesn't make sense. That to me doesn't make sense, because he's already run out there, like you said, through two breaks. He's thrown two innings. He's already out there for that second inning where he could, finish the out there for a third inning and could finish that third inning, which would put him at 2 2/3. It's just not that much of a difference to me. And with these guys, the way that they throw, I mean, he was warming up twice, I think. Just finish
it. I'm just
it.
Throwing shit against the wall.
I know, but it's just one of those. It's a clearer situation where they're not looking at what's happening on the field in that current moment and feeling that out, and that pisses me off.
I mean, the bottom line is, like, obviously we're upset. It's 2 o'clock in the morning and they just lost a game in extra innings, but they did split in Houston, which is what they want to do. And they're coming home for three straight games. Like, they could end the series at home. So that's why you needed to steal game one. They stole game one. And here we go. Like, you gotta win at home. You gotta take care of business in your ballpark. So pressure still all on Houston, even though they have their number one pitcher on the mound. Luis Severino's there. He's going to be ready to match Gerrit Cole for four, hopefully five innings, and then let's see what happens with the bullpen.
Yeah.
4 o'clock on Tuesday, it's going to be a weird start. The one thing they were talking about were shadows. Like, first couple innings in those games could go by real fast where nobody can hit. That happened in the Nationals game. Mm-hmm. Nationals game on Saturday afternoon, where the first three innings, the shadows were crazy. And it's like, you got Scherzer up there grunting, throwing 99 miles an hour. It's like, you got no friggin' chance.
So that's a very interesting point here, because it's gonna put this this thing to the test. So if you have a Severino and he's going through the lineup with these shadows and it's really making it difficult for the batters to do, do you not take that into consideration when the third time around comes up?
They won't.
But why? Because you're really not seeing a true
because
a true.
Again, I don't want to. Like argue with you about this?
I'm talking about like actual real like a real environmental situation for this particular thing.
No,
like,
I get it.
Shouldn't
it's
that
not,
be considered?
It should be, and maybe it is, but maybe it's not weighed heavily.
Yeah.
Tanaka's a more of a two-time through the order guy. His numbers, they talked about his splits. The OPS against him for third time through the order is bad. So you don't push your luck with a guy like Tanaka. Maybe they push their luck with Severino, but he also has not pitched more than four innings at any point this year. Like we still have to realize Luis Severino has not pitched a lot this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's gotten the pitch count. It's more about the pitch count, but the innings, it's all about the look. His arm is fresh at this point. It's ready to be ramped up too. He can continue to go. So it's just a matter of how comfortable they are pushing him with this pitch limit as well. I think a guy like both of those guys, if the shadows are coming into play and that's a tough situation, those are two guys that you do not want to face as an offense when there's another element in play.
It's lethal when there's shadows in play. All right, we still have a couple tickets left for Game 3 and Game 4. If you want to go to either of those, go check it out on Bronx Pinstripes Fan Shop in Section 205. I will be at the game. Scott, any final thoughts as the Yankees head home for Game 3?
Today is a day that I think a lot of people are going to look at and they're gonna be mad because they thought the Yankees should have won the game. And granted, like, the Yankees had opportunities to do that. Houston had a lot of opportunities. I think more opportunities to win that game, honestly, if we're being very honest about what happened in this game today. But yep. But even when that happened, even when the Houston Astros had that many opportunities, it still took extra innings. The Yankees took the first game, then took Verlander and company to extra innings in a low-scoring game that they had to win in that way after many opportunities that were squandered. So I think when you're looking at this in the grand scheme of what happened in Houston, the Yankees should feel really good about themselves. And they could have walked away with two wins, but they didn't. They got one and they flipped home field, and that's a good thing. So now we go
100%
home
with you. 100% with you.
Yeah, we go home and we take care of business now. That's it.
Yep. No, that's exactly the approach you have to have. Yeah, I asked you if one loss can hurt more than the other. This loss hurts, but still 1-1 on the scoreboard. You can't. That's all it is. You lose by one or you lose by 100. It's still just one loss. So.
And Verlander threw another 100 pitches.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But I don't know. I feel like pitches don't matter to Verlander at this point anymore. Like,
you do see it in certain situations, because when he came back out after that, was it the sixth inning? When he came back out the next inning, he looked different again. He looked okay. He looked like he was like more fresh. So that little tiny rest was like, recharge. And then like he goes
back
out.
So long at bats could be a thing too.
Yes. Like, that's why when I'm looking at that, the LeMahieu getting thrown out, I'm like, if we're keeping long at bats and we're containing this within one half of an inning, I think those are the opportunities you can get him. I mean, remember what happened in Tampa? How many balls did they hit back-to-back home runs off of him?
That was also short.
It was short rest, but they got to him. They got to him. It wasn't 3-4 runs extended over an entire game. It was small opportunities.
One thing to think about this week, if you've looked at the weather, Wednesday is supposed to be rain in New York. That could postpone the game to Thursday. So that could throw a wrench into some things as far as pitching and stuff like that.
Yeah. Let's hope that doesn't happen.
It always gets weird with these postseason series and rainouts. Yeah, let's hope that doesn't happen.
I think that's a bad thing.
It seems like that would favor the Astros.
Yes,
don't
it
you
would.
Think?
Absolutely,
getting,
it would.
Getting Verlander and Greinke and Cole more rest is not good news.
Their starting pitchers are better than our pitching. Like, bottom line, they have those two guys that can go into the eighth inning being highly effective. That's better than having five guys that might get to the eighth inning, even if they're good. It doesn't, yes. Even if they're good, who cares? Yeah. You got one guy who can dominate. So you getting that guy rest is a bad thing. Yeah. No rain. Keep the rain away.
No rain. Everyone do an anti-rain dance. And we will talk to you after game three.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.